Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, it's a new NBA season. That means we've got a new guest for the show. Today, we're going to be talking to Cole Huff. Cole Huff is a writer at The Athletic now. He's coming off of a terrific basketball career that, you know, just ended a little bit earlier than what we all wanted it to. Cole played at Nevada, then went to Creighton, played in the G League for a year. And I think that, God, Cole, how many of the players that we watch tonight have you played against at some point in your basketball life?
Well, definitely not many on the Lakers because they got some older players. But I did play with Malik Monk for one season, kind of, if you want to call it a season. When I was in the G League, yep. He was with the Hornets, and he would come up and down for a couple games at a time. So, played with him. I think I played against Juan Toscano-Anderson when he was at Marquette. I might have been redshirting at Creighton when he was there.
Mm-hmm. You probably caught him in the G League, too.
Probably did, yeah. I think I may have caught Gary Payton in the G League as well when he was with the Lakers. I've been around. I played against some guys.
So Cole is here. He's writing for The Athletic now. I wanted to get him on the podcast because just I love hearing the perspectives of former players, especially ones that are now breaking into the media. It's such a fun little thing to hear from just the perspective of someone who has been on the court at an exceedingly high level with, as we just discussed, some of the guys that actually played on the court tonight. So Cole, how you doing, man? How are things?
I'm doing great. First of all, I appreciate you having me on the pod. I've followed your writing for a while. I've heard your name back when I was playing in college, even though I tried not to pay too much attention to the media. I still spound your stuff every here and there. I'm doing great. I'm doing great. The NBA is back. It seems like it didn't really go away. I mean, the finals weren't that long ago, and then the Olympics and Summer League and everything. It just feels like, you know, we had like a weekend off. So, but I'm doing good. Basketball is back, and I'm excited to talk some hoops with you.
So before we started, Cole was telling me about what his kind of schedule had to look like when he was playing professionally. And what, you're probably, 28 now? So you're still pretty young. Yeah, 27. There we go. Sorry, I gave you an extra year. It was funny when I'm 31, and when before I had turned 30, people would be like, "Yeah, you're like 30 now," and I'd be like, "No, I want that extra year. I am 29.
Need that extra year just for your mental."
Oh no, of course you got to have it. So you kind of lived a very difficult schedule when you were overseas. You played in Spain for a year. You played in Turkey for a year, if I remember correctly, right?
That's right.
What was your schedule like when you were trying to keep up with the NBA?
So I'll rewind even a little bit farther. I'm a West Coast kid my whole life. You know, I'm watching all the Lakers and Clippers games and stuff at 7:30. I'm watching LeBron when he's in Cleveland, like when I'm back in high school, right when I get home from school at 4:30, I'm turning on the TV. So like kind of spoiled. Then I end up in the Midwest at Creighton. Okay, push things back a couple hours. Now, instead of watching games at 7:30, it's 9:30, almost 10 o'clock. You know, got practice with Coach McDermott and the rest of the guys the next day. I'm tired. Then I go to the G League. I'm in the East Coast. Now that's another hour. Boom. 10 o'clock starts, 10:30 starts. But luckily, the G League schedule, I'm assuming, you know, it mirrors the NBA in a way where practices aren't insane. You just go get up shots, kind of light. So I didn't really have too much problems with that. But man, when I crossed those waters and I got to Spain and I got to Turkey, I remember opening night again when the Lakers played the Clippers, like Kawhi's debut. I think I had to stay up till like 4 a.m, something Yikes. Like that, to watch a game. And yeah, I had to stay up till 4 a.m. There was another game. I think the Clippers were playing the Warriors the year before. They got Kawhi and all those guys, and it was like the 31-point comeback, and I just completely missed it because I was asleep.
Oh my god!
So
yeah,
it gets weird. I mean, you can catch the things you want to catch, but you definitely gonna suffer the consequences the next day.
You had to like live that synergy life. Did the teams you play for even have synergy?
They did not.
Yeah, no, that's tough. That's real tough.
I had some college coaches give me the synergy link, so I was good there.
Got to get the passwords. That's the key. Oh, man. So we're going to talk about the Lakers-Warriors first, and then we're going to talk about the Nets and the Bucks. We're going to transition from there to talking about rookie extensions and a few of the deals that got signed. Let's start, though, with just kind of an overarching feeling that I had watching these two games. It felt like, to me, not only in terms of the results, which the Warriors beat the Lakers, the Bucks beat the Nets, but in terms of the flow of the game, in terms of what was happening on the court, it felt like, to me, the biggest thing to take away is that the two teams with continuity, the two teams that were returning the core of their respective units, they just looked a lot cleaner and a lot more polished out there. And the two teams that were kind of starting with a lot of new pieces that they had to integrate into their rotation, it just felt like they were a little bit disheveled. And, you know, obviously we're going to talk about Russell Westbrook and the Lakers and how they're going to use him. But it just felt like there wasn't that level of continuity. You watch the ball movement from the Warriors, it was crisp. You watch the system for the Bucks, where they're just trying to, you know, have Giannis run the break and they're trying to create open threes. They felt like a well-oiled machine. Like everything to me just spoke to the level of continuity that the two winners had tonight and the level of uncertainty still that the two teams that lost tonight had.
Yeah. For sure. And before the game started, that was kind of my feeling of how things would go, just because, you know, so many new players on both sides, wouldn't have that immediate chemistry. You know, the Bucks returned pretty much, I mean, without PJ Tucker, I guess, and DiVincenzo was still hurt. They pretty much returned all their guys. So you kind of knew they would be a little bit more in sync with one another. I didn't realize just how many new players that the Nets had. You know, you figure KD is there, James Harden's there, Blake Griffin, Joe Harris, Claxton, you go down the list. But then I'm watching the game and, you know, I knew Paul Millsap was there, but kind of caught me off guard. Javon Carter, you forget that he got traded. Cam Thomas comes in at the end of the game. James Johnson is there. It's just a bunch of new guys, and, you know, just kind of clicks at that point. Like, okay, this is going to be a work in progress. No Kyrie. So that game went about as expected. I mean, I still think that there's some positives that you can take away from that game if you're Steve Nash, if you're the Nets. Kevin Durant is still Kevin Durant. James Harden looked to be in better shape. He looked healthier. He looked fine. Patty Mills, as advertised, still looks like he's over in Australia where you're at. And so, the veteran teams especially, they're not going to panic after one game, but that kind of went about as expected, in my opinion.
Man, you brought up Cam Thomas. Can we talk about what was the funniest thing that happened all night to me? Cam Thomas comes on the court. First touch he gets is he didn't know what the set was and ran like a broken curl kind of thing into the middle of the lane where he caught the ball like 17 feet away from the rim. it was like a bailout pass because he had screwed up and his man had like doubled down onto, I believe it was Javon Carter, and Javon Carter has to just like kick it to him. Immediate shot goes up, right? Second one, 10 dribbles trying to cross someone up to get a jumper, turns it over. Third one was where he got fouled by Thanasis Antetokounmpo. He goes up, makes two free throws. And then the fourth one was an immediate catch and shoot jumper. My man did not look to pass once. The brand is strong with what Cam Thomas is.
All in less than 4 minutes of play.
All in less than 4 minutes. It was glorious. It was like the most Cam Thomas experience that I, like, it was everything I hoped for in my wildest dreams.
Was that funnier than Carmelo pump faking the free throw and forgetting that he pump faked for some reason?
Dude, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. That's a good way to transition into the Lakers and Warriors, man, because yeah, that was just a weird game. And I think that like where we should start is Carmelo looked good to an extent. I think that he got real excited early on by the couple of made jumpers he made, particularly he had that baseline, like mid post ISO kind of thing on Bielitsa where he got Bielitsa just in a box and then hit that like steps sidestep to the left jumper that almost has become his brand throughout the course of his career. He was fine though. Like I think Carmelo Anthony is going to be a good rotational bench player for them. And I think that's all they're hoping for. I'm like a little bit worried about what they look like with Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say that, like, I just don't want to overreact to anything on opening night. Right. We know though that it was going to take some time to integrate someone who is such a ball dominant player into a situation with LeBron James and into a situation with Anthony Davis, who also needs his touches, obviously. It felt like to me though that they didn't really have any idea how to do that well yet, though. Like, they're even farther behind with integrating him than what I thought they would be. What did you think?
Yeah, and that's kind of just the Lakers thing. I mean, I think this is their fifth straight opening night loss. Maybe their fourth, one or the other. But, I mean, just every year they start off with a brand new team. You know, you got this year's squad. Last year you brought in, you know, Montrezl Harrell, Wesley Matthews, Dennis Schroeder the year before, Dwight Howard, Avery Bradley, the same guys that they have now. The year before that, you know, Lance Stevenson's on the team. Like, they just have a new team every year. So going into that opening game, they're never on sync. It takes them a little while to get going to find out which lineups work for them, where people like the ball in certain areas, where they need to be when LeBron's on the court. So, I had no expectation that they were going to win this game. The Warriors seem to always play them well anyways.
Yeah.
Regardless of if Klay is there or whoever's there. It's just a weird matchup. It's a fun matchup. Draymond Green plays good defense on Anthony Davis, although AD had it going tonight. But I think the Lakers team is going to somewhat mirror that championship team in a way where, you know, they're going to be very reliant on getting out in transition and playing that way because their half-court offense kind of just boils down to LeBron making a play, Anthony Davis isolating and making a play, Carmelo's going to isolate, Westbrook's out there, he's going to do his thing. So it's going to take a while for them to figure it out, but I think their thing is going to be their length, their defense, and turning that into easy points.
So I think that, like, that's the idea, right? Like, that's how they're going to be successful for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think that the addition of Russ is really going to be a driver, particularly in transition. But also, like, we saw them tonight play a lineup with like Rajon Rondo and Russell Westbrook on the court together. And the Warriors just like weren't guarding those guys out on the perimeter. They were just like, you can do whatever you want in the half court. Like, we are happy to let you take those jumpers. We're just going to pack down the paint and we are going to force you to make jumpers against us. I think that Russ is really going to help driving transition play for the Lakers. This was the, I think, second lowest team in the NBA last year, the Los Angeles Lakers. And they need someone, especially when LeBron is off the court, to be able to drive offense. And I think that that's where Russ is going to be most effective. I don't know what they're really going to do in like late game half court settings yet. Because the thing that they love to do, they love to go to that like LeBron AD, like, you know, 3-5, 4-5 pick and roll where they have shooters everywhere. And hopefully you're kind of gearing out one side of the court so those two can operate. And then you force the help defenders to come. LeBron sprays the ball out, or, you know, he kicks the ball to Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis makes a mid-range jumper. Anthony Davis is getting the ball at the rim. There's just like a lot of different sets that they can run out of a, you know, LeBron, Anthony Davis pick and roll that works. And I just don't know what you do with Russ in that set, because any set with Russ is going to be less effective than a LeBron, Anthony Davis pick and roll. And that's not a shot at Russ. That's a statement that a LeBron, Anthony Davis pick and roll is probably the most effective thing that any team in the NBA can run. Right.
Right.
But what do you do with Russ off the ball is kind of what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know. I think that that's going to be the trickiest thing for them to figure out this year.
And it's one thing if it's just Russ out there. You could use him as a cutter, camp him out in the corner and force the help. But if you got Russ out there, I mean, at the end of the game, they had Avery Bradley out there. I know he made 2 threes, but that's not really, you know, nobody's scared of Avery Bradley shooting or camping out behind the line. Same thing for Kent Bazemore. He is 2 for 8 tonight from 3. Yeah. Those guys can make shots. They're professional basketball players. You know, you give them enough attempts, they're going to go in eventually, but the defenses aren't going to overreact to that. So it'll be on Frank Vogel to figure out which players complement that LeBron, Anthony Davis pick and roll. Like, we didn't see, Carmelo out there towards the end of the game. We saw Malik Monk a little bit. I think he would be a great option. I don't know if they'll ever get down to Austin Reeves. He looked good in the preseason, but he's a rookie.
Yeah.
It'll just be it's an ongoing process with them. It's not going to be solved anytime soon, which is typical for most teams. You know, they take a little while to figure things out.
Yeah, definitely. And like, where I think they will be good is defensively. Like, I know some people are a little bit worried about the perimeter defense, but I kind of think that if you gear back Russ a little bit offensively in terms of usage, he'll be able to kind of gear up a little bit defensively. Like, he's just so athletic that you would think that he can make that work.
And they have so much length as it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really bothering the Warriors, and they're just throwing a bunch of terrible passes. But it didn't, you know, the Lakers were long enough to get those deflections. And, you know, you got AD, Dwight, LeBron, Bazemore and Russ out there to start the game. Like, that's a lot of length. I don't know how great of a fit that is offensively, as we saw, or DeAndre Jordan, not Dwight Howard, but, you know, that length, I feel like they want to muck up these games in a similar way that they did a few years ago. I think that they're really trying to recreate the championship team, and, you know, we'll see if it works.
Yeah. Like, you mentioned how well Anthony Davis played on offense, and I thought he was a monster on defense. Like, you notice when the Warriors went on that big fourth quarter run to start that quarter and take the lead and never look back. I mean, that happened without Anthony Davis on the court. I think a big part of the reason why Stephen Curry had as many problems as he did in this game, Anthony Davis is a monster defensively. He cleaned up so many mistakes on screen exchanges. He was awesome as a ball screen defender at playing that gap because he's so long and so mobile. I don't know. Like, I feel like he was my pick for defensive player of the year last year, if in the preseason, and he just got hurt, right? Like, I feel like he has a real shot to be a defensive player of the year candidate again this year. He is every year, but like, he looked great tonight, and he looked like the reason why they are going to be successful defensively this year. And I think this is their key. If we get the Anthony Davis we saw tonight and we get him for 65 games, Lakers are going to be fine regardless of what happens with the rest of their, you know, Russell Westbrook, Kent Bazemore, et cetera.
Right. Yep. Yeah. He's just got to stay healthy. We know who he is as a player. He's, you know, ever since he came to the league, he's been a really good defensive player. Like you said, the combination of his size, his length, his athleticism, it looks like he is even a little bit stronger than he was before. He looked pretty big out there on the court during this game. So the key is just staying healthy. And I know people like to give him a hard time about that. You know, he can't stay on the court. Charles Barkley calls him street clothes before the game, which is, I mean, it's cool. It's Charles Barkley. But, I mean, it's not like he's intentionally doing this. I have a soft spot for players always get hurt. You know why.
Yeah.
It's kind of out of his control, you know. He just has to hope that his off-season preparation allows for him to play more games than last year. And like you said, his availability is going to be so important for this Lakers team, just with how dynamic he is as a defender and then everything else that he brings on offense, especially when he has it going like he did during this game against the Warriors.
Yeah, God, Cole, I mean, like, how many knee surgeries did you end up having in your career?
Oh, man, by the time I finished, I think I had, the total was four or five. I can't remember. I had two in high school before I even got to college.
Yep.
And I definitely had two in college after I got to Creighton. And then, I don't know, I lost track. I had a lot of them. So, I, like I said, I have a soft spot for guys that just get hurt. They're not doing it on purpose. Trust me, guys, they're not.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's why I asked the question. I mean, like, how frustrating is that when you're going through that and trying to come back from something that is completely out of your control?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because, you know, you feel like you, especially if it's happening a second and a third time, you kind of feel like, you know, you made the necessary changes, whether it was your diet, a different form of rehab that you did, took a little bit extra time to rehab from these things, but they keep happening. It's frustrating. It's a lot more mental as well. You know, you come back physically, you might be a little bit slower, a little bit less athletic than you were before, but really a lot of it is in your head. You know, you're kind of questioning if you run too fast after this loose ball, or if you do this and you cut a certain way, if it's going to give out. So those are just some of the battles that players have on the court with themselves. You know, it's just, it's a lot. It takes a toll on you mentally after a while. So I have a huge respect for all those guys that bounce back from these injuries and, you know, all the stuff that they have to deal with the social media era and all the stuff that they get. I have a soft spot for them. I wish everyone could just stay healthy, because being injured sucks, man. It really does.
So let's transition to the Warriors from there. And a guy who it looked like was dealing with a bit of an ankle injury tonight, Jordan Poole, will have to kind of keep track of that over the course of, you know, the next week, at least, let's say. But Jordan Poole's a guy that you wrote about in the preseason. That story just got filed today. I wrote about in the preseason as a breakout player. And lo and behold, Jordan Poole looks like a breakout player, right? How awesome does he look right now? I mean, the handle looks improved. His confidence is unbelievable. Like, it's just, he looks like a different guy. He looks like a totally different guy at this point.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it helps that he's playing for Steve Kerr. And, you know, I mean, obviously to a much higher degree, Steph Curry, you know, when he was coming on, you know, you kind of just let guys be themselves. You know, Poole took some pretty crazy shots once he saw a few go in that second half, but you don't take that guy's confidence from him. And, you know, Steve Kerr just kind of let him roll with the punches. And I think that's the beautiful thing that keeps the players confidence up. You know, the rest of the players on the court, they don't jump on him for stuff like that. They allow him to be him. And quite honestly, like what better options did they have tonight? Especially, I mean, Steph wasn't shooting well. Bielitsa, you know, just playing through him, you know, him looking like a pseudo Nikola Jokic out there. that was pretty cool. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Jordan Poole. Like you said, I wrote about him in my piece today. It's confidence, man. It's half the battle when you're out there. Everyone's good. You're there for a reason. But if you think that you're going to make the shot and you have the confidence to do so and you don't run from certain situations, then you're going to be successful more times than not. And, you know, he has a huge opportunity with Klay Thompson now, and I think he's going to take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw a Worldwide Wob tweet that his boldest prediction for the NBA season is that Steph and Clay are going to induct Jordan Poole as the third Splash Brother. I love that. Like, I think that that's real. Like, we're about to get.
I think that's real too.
Like, I'm in. You mentioned Sixth Man of the Year. You mentioned Most Improved Player. Sixth Man of the Year is 22-1. I just wonder if he, like, maybe doesn't end up coming off the bench enough this year to be eligible for Sixth Man of the Year. Most Improved Player, 14-1. Like, I love those numbers. I think that that is a real, like, opportunity to make some money, and I'll probably end up placing some money on it. Although, like, what I've found is I might need to be careful. Like, if I ever want to get an award vote for these things, I probably can't actually bet on the awards. So maybe the key is saying that I have not actually placed a bet on Jordan Poole to win Most Improved Player. Please, man, NBA, give me a vote.
You can send me a DM. Shoot me a text. I won't tell anybody.
Oh, man. Yeah, his run to start the fourth quarter was so critical for them because it felt like they needed a bit of a jolt. And if you remember those Michigan runs in the NCAA tournament when he was there, especially as a freshman, that's what he did. He just kind of gives your team a jolt. And he's better than that now. Like, he's reached the point where he is a genuine NBA starter, in my opinion, and he's not just the jolt guy anymore. But what they are going to be able to do is, I think they're going to be able to sit Stephen Curry and Draymond Green more often, knowing that they can have Jordan Poole out there and actually get like a little bit of efficient offense, because last year they couldn't afford to sit both of those guys at the same time without having zero chance to score at least a point per possession last year.
Yeah, and I noticed that tonight too, or yeah, tonight, last night, whenever you guys hear this podcast. Steph was on the bench for longer periods of time than I imagined. I mean, obviously it helped that they went on that run to start the fourth quarter. You know, they didn't fall behind, and Kerr could afford to give Steph a little bit more rest. But yeah, like you said, that's going to be super important, because especially, you know, for however long, much longer Clay is going to be out, you don't want to have to rely on Steph too much and put, you know, the extra wear and tear on his body. And, you know, we know he's had a history with his ankle and his foot. You know, you just want to be careful. You want to be cautious, and, you know, kind of giving Jordan Poole the reins to be Steph Curry like in those minutes that Steph isn't on the court. That's, I mean, like I said, confidence is half the thing. That's huge for Poole's confidence. And all it takes is a few games for him to really believe that he can do it consistently. So don't be surprised if he puts together another couple of games in this fourth quarter role while Steph sits. That just kind of becomes the norm, and that's what's expected. And, you know, and one thing leads to another, and, you know, maybe just instead of the fourth quarter, it happens in the second quarter. It happens towards the end of the game a little bit. You know, those things have a snowball effect. But yeah, it's certainly helpful for them. If he weren't there to, you know, if he didn't get hot, I don't know how they would have generated points. Maybe Iguodala would have revived himself from his whatever the heck happened to him in Miami the last couple of years. It was good to see him back on the court competing with LeBron and hitting a couple threes, and same for Bielitsa. I don't know what happened to him in Miami either. Don't worry, Heat fans, I'm not bashing you guys, just making observations.
He was terrible in Miami, and it just wasn't a fit. Like, we can call it what it was, right? Like, yeah. He's bad. And it seems like Golden State, with the way that they move the ball, and particularly with the way that they kind of get him the ball actually on the move, they don't just have him spot up. He's someone that can make rapid decisions on the fly when he is moving. Like, he can pass
right
when he is driving toward the rim. He has really good peripheral vision to be able to find open shooters. It's a really good fit. Whereas in Miami, I felt like when I watched him, and where was he before Miami? Was it like even in Sacramento? Like, I felt like later in that era, he was kind of just a bystander that would spot up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, he's got a lot more skill than to just be a spot up or a pick and pop shooter. You know, like you said, you can get him on the move. You can even post him up a little bit. You know, you get him a mismatch, he's always, more times than not, he's going to make the right decision. He's not going to force anything. Just has that high IQ.
It's funny because, you know, over in Spain, which is how he ended up getting over to the NBA, he was the, I believe, ACB or EuroLeague Player of the Year. He might have won both, to be honest. He was like the hub of an offense over there. And to me, like, I'm not saying that you want to run him as a hub, but you can run a lot of that, like, short roll stuff that you run for Draymond with Bielitsa, and he can make decisions with the ball. Like, that's a better fit for him. He has those little, like, he made that little goofy ass flip shot when LeBron, like, tried to flop to get a foul call drawn. Like, that was nice. Uh-huh. Like, I enjoyed that a lot. We've talked a lot about this game, though. Do you have any, like, closing thoughts here? Like, I think the Warriors are fine. I don't want to say I have concerns about the Lakers. It just feels like a new team. They literally closed with Avery Bradley, who they picked off of waivers off of the Warriors earlier this week. Like, it's just not worth it.
Who hadn't played the whole game up until those last few minutes. So.
Yeah, so, like, it's just not worth going nuts, right? Like, it's just a weird game.
No. We've seen this story a lot of times with the Lakers in recent years with LeBron James teams, period. You know, these guys aren't freaking out over one game into the season. So I'm not going to do it either.
So let's take a quick commercial break, and then we will be back to talk about this Nets Bucks game. And I feel like I don't even know if I want to spend a lot of time on that, because that was a weird game as well. Okay, we're back. Let's go to this Nets-Bucks game. The Bucks, I don't even know what the final score was. The Bucks, like, murdered them and pulled away. And it felt like the Nets had a chance to maybe make a run early in the fourth quarter. But Steve Nash, it was funny, like, Steve Nash pulled the plug when they were down, like, 14 with 4 minutes left. Like, I was a little bit surprised about that. Yeah, but... Like, you see Giannis out there, like, still going as hard as possible when Javon Carter and Cam Thomas and all those guys are out on the court. It was interesting, though, to see just, A, that difference in terms of mentality for what these early season games mean. I think Milwaukee certainly had a extra chip on their shoulder, because Giannis is always going to play hard because that's who he is as a human being. But B, I think they wanted to consolidate their title last year by beating the Nets and winning on the night that they got their rings. They had real extra motivation in a way that Brooklyn probably didn't for this one. That's fine. But did anything stand out to you beyond the Jrue Holiday injury, which we'll talk about here momentarily?
Actually sticking with Jrue Holiday, I thought he looked really good, you know, to begin the game before he got hurt. Obviously, he had a lot more legs than what he was dealing with, having to chase around Chris Paul and Devin Booker during the finals. You know, it affected him on the offensive end, but he looked like he had some juice back. He was making his threes, which completely left him when he, you know, was probably fatigued during the finals. And he looked good. I think, you know, hopefully this heel contusion, I think is what they called it. Hopefully that doesn't set them back too long, because I don't know how capable George Hill is of playing big minutes on the championship team at this point in his career. So that would be one of my takeaways. I thought Grayson Allen, even though he wasn't making shots, I think he's going to be a nice fit for this team during the season. He, you know, the way he shoots the ball, he has 6 assists. Super underrated part about his game.
Yeah,
you know, he's a good defender as well. You know, he's not incredibly strong or incredibly quick, but I think he's really smart. He has great anticipation. I saw him cut off James Harden isolation and kind of poke it free from him. He's just a smart a role player. I think he'll fit a similar role as like a Dante DiVincenzo.
Because Grayson overlapped with you. Did you ever end up playing Grayson in college?
No, I never played against him.
So I think he's actually like kind of sneaky strong. Like if you stand next to him, like he's a little bit bigger than what you think. Like he's not like 100.
He's got a strong base too.
90 pounds.
Lower body.
Yeah. Like he can actually hold up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I mean, like he can't hold up against, you know, Kevin Durant and James Harden, who are like, James Harden's one of the strongest guards in the NBA and Kevin Durant's 7 foot tall, right? But like, I think that like against other guards, he's actually a little bit stronger than what he gets credit for through that lower half. You're 100% right there. And then the other guy that stood out off the bench for the Bucks was Jordan Wara. I mean, he had a great summer for the Nigerian national team and he had a great preseason for Milwaukee. I think that what is always concerning about Wara is how attentive is he going to be on a possession by possession basis defensively. He was pretty good tonight. Like even beyond the 15 points, like it felt like he was available and ready and willing to rotate. He had that big weak side block on Kevin Durant in the third quarter, that it felt like kind of flipped momentum a little bit, even to me. Like it was, I was very impressed with Jordan Wara's game tonight in a way that, I wasn't sure with him coming out of Louisville. Like I was not sure that we would ever really be talking about him as a rotation player in the NBA.
Yeah, I liked what I saw from him tonight as well. Definitely on the offensive end. I know he had 15 points. He took 13 shots, 6 of 13 from the field. But, you know, his shot selection told me that he's not scared of the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He took some step-back threes. He took some shots that he probably shouldn't have. But I think that's fine when you have a rookie that's, you know, we talked about that with Jordan Poole. You know, with the shot selections and stuff and, you know, kind of letting them be him. But you rather have someone that's going to go out there and, you know, not be afraid to make mistakes, rather than someone that is. And I think, I don't know what his minutes are going to look like when, you know, the Bucks have a few of their rotational guys back, like Bobby Portis, whenever DiVincenzo comes back. I don't know how things are going to look for him, but I think this was a great start to season for him. Like you said, I was a little bit surprised as well as, the defensive effort he put in. And, you know, as long as you play hard and play with energy, you're going to be awarded some extra minutes and, you know, you can, you know, make a living off of that. And I think that, you know, early in the season, he's going to have every opportunity to do so.
Yeah. I mean, War is interesting because early in his career at Louisville, I thought that the two of you actually had like more comparable games than where he is now. Like he was, I don't know how much you remember him, but he was like kind of heavy his first year at Louisville. Mm-hmm. Like he was a good, like it felt like 230 pounds and he was a spot shooter who could, you know, take advantage of a mismatch. Like I almost thought his best position was like as a small ball four, but he's improved so much in terms of his handle, particularly. Like he had a couple of moves tonight. Like he had the two crossovers into a, you know, left-handed pound dribble, jump stop, like floater with right hand leaning toward the left side at the end of the third quarter that he made. And then he had like a couple of, he had like a three crossover move followed by a sidestep to his left pull up three that he missed. I believe that was like while Kevin Durant was guarding him. And I was like, yeah, you never used to be able to do that. Like this is a different deal now, with Jordan Wara than what he was previously. So if he has that stuff, like I think that the thing that he showed me tonight, he showed me more game than Shimmy Ogilvy showed me in 4 years with the Celtics, which absolutely is important for him as he's going forward and carving out a role in this rotation.
Yeah, this is going to be a big second year for him. I didn't watch a whole lot of him during his rookie season, but from what I remember, from what I did see, it definitely looks that he, you know, has stepped into his confidence level up a lot. And, you know, some of the moves that you said he was making, like the step backs and the two dribble pull ups and stuff, you know, those are workout moves. And when you do stuff like that, in the game, you know, you're really confident. You're not afraid of, you know, whatever the results may be. So I think that's going to be important for him to keeping those minutes and keeping the spot in the rotation going forward.
So here's a good question. Like, is your, trying to integrate some of those workout moves into competitive game scenarios, like you're trying to string together, you know, two or three moves, because you were a bigger guy, you know, you were somewhere, what, like 6'7", 6'8", something like that?
Yeah, in between there.
Yeah, and you had a real perimeter game. Like when you're trying to integrate those moves into actual game situations. Like, how difficult is that?
It just depends on your situation. I think, you know, if you're on a team that's not as great, like the team that I was on at Creighton my senior year, before our point guard Maurice Watson got hurt, we were like a top 10 team and we were really good. Everyone knew their role. So I wasn't ever going to step outside the box just because, you know, I was feeling it that day and I felt like I wanted to do a little bit extra. You know, everyone knew their role and everyone needed to stay in that role for the team to succeed. But on other teams, when, you know, you're not as good or things are kind of going south, I think you are more likely to do so. And you kind of, you know, you're not afraid to get yelled at by the coach or get pulled or, you know, have your teammates get on you. So I think it's all about opportunity, all about the situation and what's going on with that specific team and with that specific player. So it's different for everybody. But then there's, you know, there's people like a Russell Westbrook or like a Jordan Poole or a Carmelo, guys that are always going to be them no matter what. Those are the ones that are, you know, have usually been like that for their whole careers. And, you know, that's the only way that they know how to play. So just to, like I said, depends on the situation, depends on the player, but it takes a lot of guts to do those things that you've worked on, a lot of confidence.
In the case of Giannis Antetokounmpo, I am blown away every time that, like, he comes back from the summer. He's like just stepping in to pull up jumpers now. And if he's going to do that, like, I think he's probably going to win MVP again. Like,
I completely agree.
Where are we at on Giannis after that first game?
I completely agree. And what you said earlier is Giannis doesn't really know how to turn it off. You know what I mean? Like, he's always going 100 miles per hour. He plays extremely hard. And that's always going to get him a few more points and a few more rebounds in the stat sheet, especially in the regular season when other guys are coasting a little bit. But yeah, he comes back from every offseason with a little bit more to his game. In the preseason, it was crazy to me that he was dribbling full court into threes. He was getting to the elbow, stepping back. He was shooting fadeaway, post fadeaways. Like, he... Man, I'm happy to see that for him too. You know, I kind of feel like now that he's got the monkey off his back, he's won the championship. It's like unlocked another level of, okay, I don't care anymore. Like, I'm the man. I'm not afraid to go to the line and shoot free throws. I'm not afraid to miss threes. Like, I am who I am. I'm confident in who I am. It's been good enough, to get this city a ring, which hadn't been done in 50 years. And, you know, it was really cool to see him go to the free throw line today and make 7 out of 9 free throws. Yeah, I'm happy for the guy. You know, by all accounts, I don't know him, but by all accounts, seems like an incredible human being. And you root for those people even more.
Yeah, I mean, you talk to anyone who is in Milwaukee, has been in Milwaukee. It's hilarious. Like, it's so rare to literally never hear a bad word about someone who is on his level. Not to say that, like, all of the superstars in the NBA are like shitheads or something like that. Like, that's absolutely not what I'm saying. But it's the way that he conducts himself. Like, he's just like a very kind person and all about the work and everything. So yeah, no, that's absolutely, someone who's like a culture setter for an organization, in every single way, shape and form.
Kind of seems like that's the DNA of most of the players on Milwaukee. Chris Middleton.
Yep.
Seems like he's the same way. I know Drew Holiday is an incredible human being as well. A really good guy. I'm sure George Hill is the same way. You can go down the list. Brooke Lopez, amazing guy. It's, you know, and that stuff has an effect on the on-court production as well. When the locker room is filled with good people and, you know, everyone has each other's best interests and you can, you know, you build that trust. People aren't going to get in trouble off the court or do anything silly. Like, that makes a team better. And I think that's why the Bucks have had so much success over the years.
So just a couple of other stray thoughts before we move into some extension stuff here. Kevin Durant was fine. Like, I have no worries. I thought that Kevin Durant was actually my pick for MVP coming into the year. I think he's going to be awesome.
Okay.
I think that I might have been wrong after seeing Giannis, but I was after that series against the Bucks last year. I was like, I was firmly on Kevin Durant is the best player on planet Earth.
I don't know how you guard him.
Yeah, I don't either. Have you ever like gone to, cause you grew up in, did you grow up in LA or are you like from around
Pasadena? So yeah, LA area.
So did you ever go down to like UCLA whenever like some of the pros go down and play and like watch him up close, like in a gym like that?
No. So I've never been to like the Rico Hines runs or anything like that. But I've been to, you know, like working out in the summertime over at Pepperdine.
Yeah.
Tons of NBA players come by, and get their off season workouts. And I never saw Kevin Durant. But I saw like the Jimmy Butler, Kyle Kuzma, Blake Griffin, lots of guys. And yeah, I can only imagine what Kevin Durant's workouts are like.
It's the balance that stands out most with him. Like it's the balance at the size that stands out most. Like it's unlike anything you've ever seen. Someone who is that big and like, frankly, like gangly. Just cause he's so long and shoots over the top of everyone. Like he can like be driving left, plant left foot, almost like not even land with his right foot and pull up for a perfectly balanced jumper. It's unlike anything I've ever seen in person. He's a total freak show. Kevin Durant.
And I mean, you have guys with similar builds too, Bol Bol is a little bit taller. Just similar, you know, kind of slim build with that length, but it just looks completely different. Like Kevin Durant is a really special basketball player. And some of that is through the grace of God, but I've heard incredible workout stories about him and how he goes game speed and really, you know, perfects his craft. So that's a one of a kind basketball player right there.
Yeah. Like even like Anthony Davis, like you watch Anthony Davis tonight and he still like kind of stumbles and falls over, right? Like there are times where he doesn't look he looks like a big man. He's a very coordinated big man who has some guard skills, but he still moves more like a big man. Like Kevin Durant is probably his height and has just as much length and he legitimately moves like a guard. Kevin Durant is a marvel to me. I don't understand him.
One of a kind.
At all. A couple other stray thoughts on this Nets team. The Patty Mills signing just looks awesome. He's not going to go 7 of 7 from three most nights, but
he's
just
not
a confident shooter. Right. Like, yeah, Patty Mills. I mean, it felt like in the Olympics, he was never going to miss a shot when he took one, but you know, he'll be a useful piece for them. 100%. Nick Claxton, like James Harden is going to make Nick Claxton a lot of money. It's where I'm at.
Set the screen and roll and James Harden will find you. Claxton wasn't even like finishing them with dunks. They're all kind of awkward finishes through contact and stuff tonight. But yeah, he's going to make a lot of money playing with Claxton. I'm surprised it didn't really work out with DeAndre Jordan last year, but I guess he didn't really play that much. So,
yeah, I'll say this about Claxton too. Like, I love Nick Claxton. Like, I've been a fan. I had him as a top 20 prospect when he was in the draft, I believe 2019. Like, I'm a big fan of his. He did some shit tonight that like kind of bugged me. Like, he had the one play where he just like didn't get up and run in transition, and his man that like he should have been on as the trail man ended up getting a wide open three pointer. He had just like a couple of things like that. Like he needs to like be
his
athletic.
Motor wasn't going
yeah. He needs to be athletic energy guy. He can't take those possessions off. I don't think that's what's going to frustrate me about him if he continues that.
Yeah. He's got to be JaVale McGee. I don't know. You can take that however you want to take it, but JaVale McGee, similar block shots, play above the rim, catch lobs, and just play as hard as hell. You know, I don't think, definitely not in his later years, maybe back when he was in Washington and whatnot, but, you know, on all the teams he's been on in recent years, JaVale McGee is like the perfect Nick Claxton comp of just playing hard and doing your job, and good things will happen as a result.
Yeah, like low usage, go up and get dunks, defend within the scheme, block shots. Compete. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, I know the other thing that bothered me with Claxton, he had like perfect rebounding position the one time against Giannis, and Giannis just like bumped him and his body like flew forward like he had gotten like hit by a Mack truck. And look, Giannis is probably pretty similar to a Mack truck in terms of strength, but like he's got to be able to hold his position on the defensive glass and be able to rebound in situations like that. The Nets in general tonight, I thought really, really struggled, especially early on the defensive glass. So, we'll see what that looks like. Do you have any other stray thoughts on this game though, before we move?
Not really on the game. Just, you know, gotta wait and see what happens. With Kyrie Irving, he's a huge part of the team. Encouraged by James Harden, by Kevin Durant, they look good. And I don't know. We'll see how these older role players, step into their roles as the season goes on. But not a great start for like Millsap and James Johnson and all those guys, LaMarcus Aldridge. But we'll see. You know, it's game one of 82.
Man, just never forget the Cam Thomas premiere. literally 4 touches, 2 field goal attempts, 2 free throw attempts, 1 turnover.
Box office.
what a player. Just unbelievable. We'll take a quick commercial break again, then we'll be back to talk about some rookie extensions. Okay, so we're going to take like 15, 20 minutes and talk about these rookie extensions here. I think the one that stood out most was the extension that didn't happen with DeAndre Ayton and Phoenix. I wrote like 2,500 words on that at The Athletic. I don't even know that I want to dive wildly deep into it myself. But Cole, like, I'll just give you the floor. Like, what were you as surprised as I was that the Suns didn't extend DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah, because common sense kind of tells you, okay, he was really good last year. He was great in the playoffs. He's one of the 3 best players on the team, defensive anchor. Well, I guess Mikal Bridges could also make that case, but
he's more important defensively than Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, especially when, you know, all you got after him was Dario Saric last year. Yeah, I was really surprised. It just felt like a no-brainer to me, especially with some of the other deals that were getting done. I tried to read up on your article and John Hollinger's article, breaking things down, and maybe it was to avoid like some luxury tax stuff. I don't know. Am I right with that?
It's hard to say with Phoenix. Like it just always is there. I think that really what it comes down to is they don't value him as a max player. Like, I think that if you value a guy as a max player, you don't really fuck around with stuff like this. You just max him, right? Like, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, period. You don't
deal.
You don't play the games. Like, if I was Phoenix, I would have probably gone to Bill Duffy and Nima Namakian, who are DeAndre Ayton's representatives, and said from, you know, the start of the offseason, which I guess was August 1st, was the first day that they could have done this. I would have just gone to them and said, look, this is the offer. We're going to offer him a 5-year max extension. We're going to do a team option on year 5. That's what we want. That's going to be the offer now. It's going to be the offer at the end of the negotiation. You can take it now. You cannot take it now. We love DeAndre, but we also like he's been great now and worth a max contract for 5 months. So take it or leave it. And that way you can at least say, hey, we offered DeAndre Ayton a max. His representative chose not to take it in that situation. It's a really advantageous max for the team because the TV money in this upcoming negotiation for television and streaming rights for the NBA is going to come in the year 2025-26 season. So you're going to get years 4 and 5 at a discount anyway. That's why when James Jones said that, oh, I was surprised that they weren't even willing to negotiate like a 3-year max, I was like, wait, why would you want a 3-year max? That doesn't help you, because then you have to pay him potentially $50 million a year if he continues to emerge as a max level player. So
they would have to renegotiate after those 3 years when the TV money comes in and stuff, right?
Yeah. So I'm thrown a little bit by Phoenix's decision making here, but maybe they end up proven right and he's not the guy that I think he is in terms of being a great center long term.
And I think the timing of it makes it look seem a little bit worse as well. Just, you know, they're shelling out money to Mikal Bridges and then they just bring in Landry Shamet and give him the extension. So just, you know, and then he's been there the longest and he doesn't get the max. He doesn't get the money. It's just a little bit confusing. And then those two signings or extensions made it look a little bit worse.
Like, here's the thing. Would you rather have Bryn Forbes or Landry Shamet?
Honestly, I don't really know what the difference is. Who would you rather have?
I think that's it. Like, I think they're about the same in terms of value. I don't really think that either of them can play all that effectively in the playoffs. Bryn Forbes over the last 2 years is going to make like $7 million. Mm-hmm. And Landry Shamet in 2022-23 and 23-24 is going to make $20 million. Like that, it just seems like to me, I would have rather used the money that you're spending on Landry Shamet, who might not actually be able to help you in the playoffs. And if you're a little bit less sold on DeAndre as a max player, just give him the money that you're going to give to Landry and then go out and sign Brent, literally go out and sign Bryn Forbes next offseason when he's a free agent, right? So, I'm a little bit
thrown. That one confused me a little bit. His career has been so weird to me. I mean, it got off to an incredible start his rookie year. I'm speaking about Landry Shamet. His rookie year, he was really good in Philadelphia, got traded, was really good in LA for the Clippers. He had like, I don't remember the exact stat, but something about his 3-point makes or maybe his percentage ranked like up there with Steph Curry for rookies all time. And then he keeps getting traded. He keeps bouncing around from team to team and he hasn't looked as good as his rookie year. It's just been a weird 3-year career. Is it 3 years? 3 or 4 year career?
3 years now, yeah.
Yeah, 3 years. He's been on so many teams, it's hard to know what year he's in, but it's been weird. I mean, hopefully he looked good in the preseason though. I will say that. Hopefully he can get back on track. He's got the money. Maybe that does something for him mentally and he's able to play a little bit better, but I hope it works out for him. But as of now, I don't know what the difference is between him and Bryn Forbes. I agree with you.
Jaren Jackson gets a 4-year, $105 million extension. I think that that's just like kind of a perfect deal. It was a really creative structure from Memphis where they have decided to go with a descending structure where Jaren Jackson will be paid more up front and less as the contract moves forward into the future. I saw a couple people speculate, including John Hollinger, who I love and adore. Obviously, he's been on this podcast many times. Say that they wouldn't have structured the contract this way because it makes it harder for the Grizzlies to then extend him off of this deal because the max that they'd be able to extend him off of the final year there would be basically like $28 million in the first season. And if he continues to stay healthy, he's probably going to be a max player. I disagree with that. I think that given that the fourth year will be at the start of the expansion of the salary cap and television money, you can have a much easier time renegotiating and extending his contract long term. Okay. All of that is like cap minutia stuff. What do you think of Jaren Jackson, the player, though, Cole?
Yeah, and then just real quick to add on to that, I think I read John Hollinger's piece as well, where that would give like the Grizzlies a little bit more flexibility when it comes to some extensions for like Dylan Brooks and younger guys. Okay.
So yeah, definitely.
Okay, that makes more sense. I think Jaren Jackson's really good. We haven't seen a whole lot of him so far. You know, especially last year, I think he only played in 10 or 11 games, something like that. So that's kind of the risk you run with him. But from what I've read and what I understand, those injury clauses and things like that are in his contract, and that kind of affects what type of money he ultimately gets. But I think he's a hell of a player. I think one area he can get better in is rebounding. He doesn't get a bunch of rebounds, but he's a great defender. He has a great motor on both sides of the ball. He gets after on defense. He blocks shots, and then, he's a pretty good shooter from three. And I think that he's a great complement to Ja Morant. And I think, locking him up for those years, and having him and Ja kind of grow together, that's going to be great for Memphis. Hopefully he can just stay healthy.
Yeah. And that's been their goal this whole time. Like they really feel strongly about building from within and building a core that people just want to be a part of. Right. Like it's not even necessarily that, look, they want to build the best team possible, but they also want to build a situation that has a lot of guys that are about hard work and are about like enjoying being around one another. And I really respect that. And I think that just handling this now in the way that they did is really smart. I like getting the injury protection. I think that's also really good. This deal makes sense to me, for everyone involved. Also, we've got the Mikal Bridges signing, 4 years, $90 million. I also wrote about that one. I think it's a home run for Phoenix. One of the best,
he's really good.
Yeah. One of the best off ball players in college basketball. You definitely played against Mikal when you were at Creighton, right?
I played against him a lot. Yeah. We had some battles, not me and him personally, but, us and Villanova. For as good as we were, we never beat Villanova while I was there, which is a shame. So I kind of have a little, I'm a little salty about that.
Go ahead. Just fuck Mikal Bridges. Like, it's fine. Like, it's good.
No. He seems like a good dude. Honestly, all those guys that come from Villanova, they're so good. They're so, locked in on their game plans, extremely skilled. They can pass. They all defend. High IQ, can pass. No extras, no nonsense with them on the court or off the court. They're just all like finely tuned players. And, I really respect that about them. That, the Mikal Bridges that you see now, he, in my opinion, was a similar player, that he was in college. He shoots a little bit better, but just playing his role, not doing too much. One of the best defenders in the league, uses his length, his athleticism, to contest shots, to bother the dribble off ball. He gets in passing lanes and makes a living there. Has turned himself into an incredible 3-point shooter. I think he shot 42%. I want to say over 40% from three. Yep. He has a little bit to his game off the dribble. If you close hard on him, and get to the free throw line. I'm a huge fan. And that took a lot for me to say, just because I used to play against them all the time in college, and we can never beat them. Him and Josh Hart and DiVincenzo and Jalen Brunson, Pascal, they had a loaded team, man. But yeah, he's really good. Like you said, I think this is a home run signing. He's the perfect fit for this Phoenix team to fit alongside Chris Paul and Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. So I think they hit it out the park with this.
And then finally, Kevin Huerter. I would imagine. Did you ever get a chance to play against Huerter?
Never got a chance to play against him. He went to Maryland. So we never got that matchup. I played with one of his teammates on the G League, but yeah, I think that's a good signing as well. $16 million a year on average, I think, is what it is. That sounds about right. He's still really young. We saw how good he was last year and how he stepped up in the playoffs and was one of their more trustworthy players. I'm interested to see what exactly his role is. They kind of have a bunch of wings. I think as of now, he's probably the sixth man.
Yeah.
So we'll just see how they figure out how to distribute those minutes to all the wings. But over time, some of those guys are going to be gone. Gallinari's not going to be there. Lou Williams is not going to be there. I know they're not wings, but that'll open up minutes, and I think that he has enough positional versatility down the line on both ends of the court to slide into different spots and be used anywhere. So I think another home run signing. I don't see anything wrong with the structure of it. What do you think about the deal?
So I thought that it's a deal that Herter probably had to sign because he is going to be coming off the bench this year. And it's just weird timing for him, for his contract to be ending while they're competing. It's like great timing because they're competing, but it might not be the best timing for him to show out in the way that I frankly think he's capable of. Really underrated smart defender. We saw that in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, he's bigger than what people think. Like, he's 6'7" and he has good enough feet to be able to stick with twos and like even some ones. Like, he can stick with a few smaller players. Not as good guarding up the lineup because he's not quite as long and as strong as someone that is like a 6'7" wing typically is. But he's a legit, really good off-ball defender as well, and isn't a negative on defense while also being able to shoot 40% from three and makes decisions at a high level as a passer. I think that like he's a definite long-term starter in the NBA. And I think this deal in 2 years is going to look like, wait, what was he doing signing that deal? When in reality, like, he didn't really have an option right now because just what his role is going to be. So I love this deal for Atlanta. I think that this is an absolute home run for them. You couldn't have said it better. I think that's dead right.
Yeah, they're gonna get Kevon Herter, right?
Kayvon. Oh my God. Yeah. Unbelievable. Love it so much.
You'd be surprised how much crazy stuff goes on in those locker rooms.
We'll get into that at a different date. We'll talk about locker room dynamics, maybe.
Our best stories.
With someone like Kevin Herter playing in Atlanta. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about, Marvin Bagley, a player that did not get an extension. It came out through his representation that he is not going to be in the rotation for the Sacramento Kings early in the season here. And Excel and Jeff Schwartz decided to take that public before the Kings did in their opening game. Jeff Schwartz said, "Sacramento has informed Marvin Bagley he is not in the opening night rotation, which is completely baffling. It's clear they have no plans for him in the future and yet passed on potential deals at last year's deadline and this summer based on value. Instead, they chose to bring him back but not play him, a move completely contradictory to their value argument. This is a case study in mismanagement by the Kings organization." For people who don't know, Jeff Schwartz doesn't do this shit. This is not an agent. Rich Paul is very loud and he's out there and he's sitting courtside with Adele at the Lakers Warriors game, and more power to him, right? If you have the opportunity to live that life, live your best life. But Jeff Schwartz doesn't do that. Jeff Schwartz is a behind the scenes dude. The number of texts I got just laughing at this and going whoa, we can't believe Jeff Schwartz did this, from people like other agents, people within the NBA on the team side. I probably got 8 or 9 on my phone, just what is happening right now? Where are you at on Marvin Bagley at this point, Cole? Fascinating situation, obviously. I think I understand it from both sides, but it's a complicated one, it feels like.
Yeah, it just feels like his whole tenure in Sacramento is just, he's been in a tough position. I mean, obviously he's dealt with a lot of injuries, so some of that has been because of that, but I don't know. I don't want to speak bad about the organization that I don't know too much about, but I mean, you see similar things with what's going on with Buddy Hield. You know, it's like these young players that are pretty good, and in Buddy Hield's case, I think he's really good. One of the best shooters in the league. Just so much uncertainty about roles. They're floating around in trades all the time. That's pretty unsettling as a player.
You know, I mean, like, Buddy Hield got traded this summer, if you don't remember. Like, he got traded on draft day, and then it got reported that he got traded, and then they went and traded.
Show back up to Sacramento and act like it never happened. You know, just it's weird. And you know clearly way more about the agent than I do. But I guess you don't poke the bear. Every man has his limit of how much he's going to take. He's fed up. He wants his client. He wants better for his client. And, you know, I respect him for that. I mean, I have no problems with what he did. It's funnier now hearing it from you and hearing the reactions that you got from it.
Yeah.
That just makes the whole situation funnier since he's not that kind of guy. But yeah, hope he gets figured out. I mean, he hasn't had a great start to his career, but off the top of my head, I'll say he's probably still like 22, 23, something like that. He's still a young guy.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, tons of talent. Don't really know what position he's best at on the court to kind of throw some weird lineups out there with Rashawn Holmes, and I don't know. But I hope it works out for him. Incredible talent. I'll leave it at that.
So with – he might have actually been, like, too young. Like, you guys almost didn't overlap, right?
No, yeah. I didn't get a chance to overlap with him.
Yeah. So with Bagley – I think that where I sit on this is, like, there have been no winners in the Marvin Bagley era in Sacramento, right? Like, the team drafted Marvin Bagley over Luka Doncic, and at the time, Vlade Divac was like, yeah, we think he can play some small forward. And, I mean, what the fuck are you doing, Vlade?
That was very clear that he was not a small forward.
Yeah, like, that was just never going to happen. And they take him over Luka Doncic, and it doesn't result in the franchise turnaround that the organization hopes for. So, you know, despite the fact that he theoretically should be a really good fit with De'Aaron Fox and should have been able to make that work, he hasn't really even proven that he can be like a rotation player. Like, he is so bad on defense. He got better. Like, last year was the first year where I was like, okay, he at least, like, doesn't get totally lost in the gap when they're playing ball screen defense and he has to guard both the big man and the ball handler. Like, he used to consistently just get stuck in no man's land like it was his job. And he still does it occasionally, but, like, it's gotten a little bit better. But then he'll have these moments where he just, like, completely turns out, like, in terms of awareness and backside awareness, because he's playing the four and he maybe shouldn't be playing the four. Like, he's probably more of a big man. So, like, the team is lost. And then on top of it, like, last year, his dad demands a trade over Twitter. So the team does not win.
Lots going on.
Yeah. The player, it's been a tough situation. Like, I don't want to absolve the Kings, although I do blame Bagley more for this. I don't want to absolve the Kings. Like, they should have moved him by now, I think. And they've known that this wasn't going to work, I feel like, for a while. It is true that his contract does hold value for them. Like, if they want to go and acquire Ben Simmons, he is on an expiring deal. They can move him and Buddy Hield, and that's your salary match for a Ben Simmons trade, right? So I don't want to act like he doesn't have value to them in a potential future planning situation. But, like, come on. Like,
but does he have value to other teams?
I don't think he has value. I think his contract has value. I don't think he has all that much value right now. And look, like, it was a tough situation. Like, the general manager who drafted him and declared him a small forward at one point because they believed in his perimeter talent, like, he's gone now. He decided to step down. And the coach that was his rookie year coach got fired, and Dave Yeager. And they bring in Luke Walton, who, like, I feel good betting against Luke Walton when I bet against the Kings, right? Like, I don't think he's very good. I don't think he has any idea what he's doing in terms of rotations. And that's been going back to when he was the coach of the Lakers and was bringing Julius Randle off the bench, right? So I don't want to absolve the Kings of this because I think the Kings have made it a little bit harder. He's also gotten hurt a lot, right? But it's like, I understand why the agency is frustrated, because look, like, Oklahoma City is sitting there with like a $12 million trade exception. Like, Oklahoma City should take a flyer on Marvin Bagley, in my opinion. Like, this is a perfect situation. Go put him in a zero stakes situation away from the Kings, where he can just go and develop. He can play next to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Oklahoma City give up like a second round pick or something like that, or a couple second round picks, and go from there. Like, that to me is like the best solution for how this ends. But maybe the Kings think that they can still be in the mix for a Ben Simmons deal and can't make that move until they know what's going to happen with Ben. Like, the whole thing's fucked up. Like, I don't know what to say beyond that. Like, the whole thing's fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the situation that you just mentioned about him getting traded to like one of these teams where he could go in and play a lot of minutes. I mean, ideally that would be Sacramento, where he's already at, like a team that's not very good, that doesn't have a whole lot going on at his position.
But the problem is that they think they're good. Like, the Kings think that they're good and they want to make the playoffs, so they aren't going to play him. So, like, I don't know.
For, like you said, nobody's winning in this situation. Neither side is winning. And I think that they could both win if they moved on. You know, they get the Kings would get something in return, whether that's draft picks or another piece to throw into the mix. And then Bagley gets to a team where even if he's not even that great, and, you know, in whatever situation he ends up in, but I'm sure just mentally it would be a breath of, you know, a breath of fresh air to get out of Sacramento and on to a different organization, different coach, around different players, where he can kind of just start over.
And like, this is unfair to Bagley. Like, this is something that, like, he shouldn't have to deal with, but I'm sure he does on some level. Like, I think the fans are just, like, kind of done with him at this point. Mm-hmm. Because they drafted Luka Doncic, or they drafted him over Luka Doncic. That's not something that was Marvin Bagley's choice.
That's not Marvin Bagley's fault.
Right. But unfortunately, he gets blamed for it. And, like, he struggles to play defense. And I think fans are sick of just watching him try to play defense and consistently be in the wrong place. He's also never healthy.
So.
He's also never healthy. Like, and like we talked about earlier, that's something that we shouldn't blame him for. Like, we can probably blame the defensive awareness and, like, attention to detail on him on some level, but mm-hmm. like, we can't blame the injuries, and we can't blame him going number two on Marvin Bagley. But, like, Kings fans are rightfully frustrated with the situation. Like, if I was a fan, I'd be pissed. You know what I mean? Like, I'd be annoyed with how the whole thing has gone down. I don't think that those feelings are unfair. It's just, like, the whole situation sucks, and it's probably time for it to end at this point, for everyone's sake.
I agree.
Okay, Cole, we end this podcast asking everyone, what is the best movie that you've seen recently? Or at least just talking about movies. We can have long conversations about movies on this show, because I watch too many of them.
Oh, boy. You put me on the spot. I'm not a movie watcher. I'm big into TV shows. I probably watched like two or three movies since quarantine started. I just don't watch them.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah. I don't have the patience to sit there for 2 hours. but yeah, I'm big on shows. Let's see. What am I watching now? I finished, I'm all caught up on Snowfall. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I am. I've never watched it. Is it good?
It's really good. Yeah, I'm caught up on that. Believe it or not, my wife and I, we have tried to watch Game of Thrones dating back to like college, and we've always watched like two or three episodes at a time and then not watched it for like 3 months. So yeah, we're somewhere in like the fourth season with that. Probably will never finish that. But I would definitely say Snowfall is up there. Just because I'm on the spot and I'm panicking a little bit, I haven't seen this show recently, but I'll just let you know my favorite show of all time is Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Maybe that'll win me over with some fans. What's your favorite movie that you've seen recently?
Cole. So here's the thing. I keep track of all the movies I've seen this year on Letterboxd, which is a great app. I've seen 181 movies this year. Yeah, and I've seen, I think, like 120 2021 releases, like movies that came out this year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's laughable. I finally watched No Sudden Move, which is Steven Soderbergh's new movie. It has like Don Cheadle and Benicio del Toro. It's like this crime movie. I thought it was really good. I watched seven movies this weekend because wow. I was like, look, it was the weekend before the NBA. I wanted to decompress. Like,
okay,
yeah, it was time.
Getting your last little bit of fun in before the grind starts.
That's right. And the problem is I watched Halloween Kills, and that was not very good, unfortunately.
Okay. I have one movie I remember off the top of my head that I saw semi-recently, probably the last movie I saw. I saw Space Jam.
The new Space Jam?
The new Space Jam. I think that's the last movie I watched. So there you go.
There's one I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
That's one, because I'm like
going to it with expectations. It's gonna be the same like the Space Jam movie you saw when you were a kid. No, it's not gonna bring back any of those type of memories. It's, you know, it's
for the
kids. So, but you know, if you're into some cringeworthy LeBron dad jokes and acting and stuff, then it might be for you.
You know, I think that's why I've been worried about watching it. Like I've had it like queued up on HBO Max a couple times, and I just keep going to other shit. And I think that I haven't watched it because I've just been worried. Like I love Space Jam when I was a kid, and it's like I don't know. I don't want that. Yeah, I don't want that hate in my life. Cole, tell the people where they can find you online. Tell the people where they can find your work. All that stuff.
All right. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Cole Hoops. That's my first name, C-O-L-E, and Hoops, H-O-O-P-S. Also on Instagram, you can find me there as well, even though I'm not on it much. You can read my work at The Athletic. You can read my, if you're into the Clippers, I do freelance work for 213 Hoops, which is a local website that covers the Clippers. I just finished up at Franchise Sports Media. I finished the WNBA season, local website out here where I covered the Las Vegas Aces. That was pretty fun. And then I'm going to be writing for Bet for the Win, Bet FTW. I'm getting started there this week. You can find similar betting content that you might find on The Athletic and some articles. If you like that, you can follow me there as well. So I think that's probably as good as I've done on plugging myself and all my stuff. It's usually a disaster. I did pretty well with it.
That was perfect. Nailed it. Nailed it all. So over at The Athletic, you should read Cole's preview of, you did a bunch of awards previews. You did just a few thoughts randomly. A lot of it is geared toward betting, which, I mean, fuck, like this is how I live, right? Like I love it. We've done so many gambling podcasts.
That's how we all live now.
I've done so many gambling podcasts on this show previewing gambling season for the NBA. It will continue once college basketball season starts. You can believe that.
I might go read. Hop onto a pod.
You're welcome back soon. Trust me. So I've also written a mock draft. I've done the top 59 players this year because Milwaukee has lost their pick and forfeited it. But you can go read that at The Athletic. You can go read my thoughts on the Mikal Bridges extension. You can go read, I wrote about seven breakout guys that I'm really excited about. And, I obviously wrote about the DeAndre Ayton thing that I referenced earlier. So go to The Athletic. Keep me employed. Keep Cole employed. Like, please subscribe over there. Until next time though. I'll be back later this week with some more NBA thoughts, but we'll talk soon. Bye.